Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It wasn't the liquor talking when he said I was the problem. Good news is, I won't be much longer.
Hello, everybody, especially you. This is Again With Us, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 7, Episode 21, I Married a Jock Murderer. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Hello, listeners. Before we get into all of the jock murderer marrying that there is still to discuss somehow, we need to tell you what's happening on the Patreon. Again with this episode 169, nice, is dropping November 24th. It is Let's Watch Alyssa Milano in the Season 3 Christmas episode of Who's the Boss? We're really going all the way back to 1986 to talk about Season 3, Episode 11, The Christmas Card. It's on Daily Motion. The link will be in the show notes. You can or cannot watch it. It's truly up to you. I think we hit all the high points in that one, and you're fine if you decide to give that one a pass.
Yeah, I think so. I'd never seen a full episode, and I took that one for the team. So make your choices accordingly.
Look, if I have to watch a Ray Donovan, you have to watch a Who's the Boss.
I think that I have to watch like 15 Who's the Boss. So yeah. Agree.
Anyway, all of that and more is at againwiththispodcast.com/club. It's a good time, and there's so much content there. If you join at any level, you get that. You get access to the Discord. You get lots of fun access to me and Sarah directly, access to other fans. It's great. Not so great is this episode, but we have to get into it. Starting with our C-plot. Matchmaker Megan's sneakiness gives Ryan the wrong idea. Ugh. We open here on another meeting of Brown Club, and once I started seeing the shots where everyone in them was wearing brown, I couldn't not see them. It's like 99 really was the year that brown was trying to be the new black.
Oh, it so was. That and brown and pink and black and baby blue together.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I can't act like I'm better than it.
Oh.
I'm just noticing it in the visual aids. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Lexi, in her brown, is confronting Brown Megan about a personal ad Megan placed for Lexi in the paper, because it's the past. The ad just lists all of the requirements that Lexi had given Megan, and Megan set up an 800 number that applicants can call to get the questionnaire they then fill out and return with their photos in the U.S. mail. Oh, this is hilarious in the age of apps, and I'm obviously not even on them, but still.
I mean, I know. And it's like, what exactly are you advertising at the Lexi Sterling agency? Patent medicines? Like, it does feel like this is dated even for then.
Yeah.
But yikes. Either way.
Megan snits that she put a lot of work into this and Lexi can't back out on her name partner promises now. And Lexi shoots back that as the boss, she can do whatever she wants. By now, they have arrived at Lexi's office where her desk is covered with mail she can somehow tell is only from all of her suitors. Lexi defensively says the dudes are probably all dorky and ugly, but here's what Megan finds in the first envelope she opens. Clip two.
To my new love. Dare I dream again? Open my heart to the miracle of a new love? My head says no, but still I feel this connection to you, another heartbroken stranger in the rocky road to a lasting relationship.
Oh. All right, big deal. He's a poet.
Oh, my God. And a serious babe.
Oh. Okay, he's not bad. But wait. No, he's from over the hill. He's from the valley. Geographically undesirable. He won't do. But you know what? Keep looking. I don't want all these dorks to think that, you know, they wasted a stamp.
Yeah, well, thanks for the vote of confidence, huh?
Don't let it go to your head. And remember, Megan, if you spill the beans, you'll be looking for a new job.
Okay.
Just look for a new job now, please.
Truly.
Even you can do better than this, honestly.
Yeah. Get your cancer friend, Jane, to get you a job at Amanda's company. Like, that's where all of the flotsam washes up, it seems like.
Yeah. Or, I don't know, just freelance this yourself. You clearly know how to write ads that get a response.
Mm-hmm.
So why not just go out on your own? And if Lexi doesn't like it, she can fuck off.
Or why not open a matchmaking agency, which was also a more of a thing back then than is now, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
You heard the reaction to the photo, and so I'm going to need everyone to go to the visual aids and look at it. Like, I am not seeing what they're seeing at all. It's like the Baby Mama line where Tina Fey is like, he's so beautiful, and Amy Poehler's like, where?
Yeah.
This is an attractive man, but he looks like Will Arnett before he got his hair plugs. And he's like got a scruffy, like half a goatee. It's, and he's wearing a poet shirt, but it's like mustard. It's all bad. It's all bad.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And the poetry, I'm pretty sure he stole from Usher. But sure. Other than that, I see Megan's point and a question mark. I don't.
Right. Anyway, the next day, Megan is confirming the reservation of a hotel suite in her name when Ryan rolls up to surprise her with flowers. Her back is turned and he looks pained as he eavesdrops. He is the newest charter member of Brown Club, by the way. Not kidding about all the brown. When he knocks, Megan looks guilty at the sight of him and quickly ends the call. And when he asks her to lunch, she has to beg off because she just has so much work to do on this project for Lexi. Ryan asks if Lexi is sending her out of town, what with the hotel and so forth. And Megan says it's not that, but she can't say anything more than that. And when he asks if he will see her that night, no, because she's going to be working and he hopes Lexi's paying her overtime. And as he's leaving, Lexi says something shitty to him about his relationship with Megan, and he snits back about her keeping Megan so late on this mysterious special project. And Lexi, I guess trying to cover what's actually happening, totally sells Megan out by lying that she's not working on anything right now except her regular clients, and Ryan probably just misunderstood her, and Ryan's got a lot to think about, and the best thing I can say about this is Lexi's outfit in this scene is very cute.
It is.
It's also in the visual aid. It's like a sheath sort of bias cut floral thing.
Yeah, she can really wear a cap sleeve, that mm-hmm. one. I don't give Lunar much, but I'll give her that. Cheerfully, she looks great.
She does. That night in the laundry room, Ryan complains to Michael about all the nights he's been spending alone, and Michael's like, oh, word, but declines to make any insinuations about it, so Ryan has to go ahead and do that himself. Clip 3.
Hey, did it ever bother you that Megan was a, you know, professional woman?
You mean a hooker? Yeah, maybe it bothered me a little, but I got over it. Why, does it bother you?
Nah, it's in the past. You don't think she'd ever go back to that kind of life, do you?
No, not Megan. It's not who she is anymore.
Yeah, that's what I think, too.
Great. End of plot line.
It's a beautiful dream. Sorry, Sarah. It's
it
not.
Is.
It's not. The next day at the office, Lexi checks in on Megan's progress. Megan has involved Ralph, the IT guy, to make a computer program to sort the 25 guys in contention that she wants to narrow down to 5. And Lexi says Megan can start dating them tomorrow. And Megan protests, but Lexi says she just has to meet them for one drink and vet them for bad breath, BO, bad skin, etc. When she dangles the promotion again, Megan agrees to date them once each. She does not agree to follow them into the men's room and check out their hogs, however. So that's one boundary that Megan has, I guess. Congrats. When Lexi leaves, Megan checks the results from Ralph's program. And oh no, the questionnaire that she gave Ryan to test it out shows he is Lexi's most compatible match. Oh, no. And the next night, Ryan is out for drinks with a client at the stupid stage bar when he spots Megan on one of her fake dates, which just looks like a regular-ass date from where he is. And at the table, Megan's explaining to Guy what the situation is. And the more she talks, the more it seems to dawn on her how crazy it sounds. But I guess she is hot enough for him to go with it, although he hates this bar. Strike.
Same.
Yeah, it's a stroke in his favor. She just needs to get changed for the valet before they go somewhere else. Her date will handle it. And I guess Ryan is dumb as well as suspicious, because when Megan's date takes his wallet out, Ryan thinks he's like paying for services out in the open at the table. Shut up, Ryan. Actually, don't talk to her. This is dumb. He won't, because that's the end of this plot line for this week. Alas. Moving on to our B plot. Michael breaks new personal ground in bad financial decisions. We open on a fancy house. Jane's on the pool deck getting a pedicure while Michael floats by sipping a fruity drink, saying they need a bigger house. And from under her big hat, Jane disagrees. Michael's problem is he's never satisfied, not even with their 10,000 square feet and a putting green. But Michael and his Speedo need a bigger garage, Elsa, so he can park his Ferraris without the neighbors thinking he's bragging. Enter pinup model of the era, Victoria Silvstedt, in a skin-tight dress to tell him there's a guy in the ER with a boil on his butt before she morphs into Nurse Amy, because Michael has, in fact, fallen asleep under a takeout container of Thai food that Nurse Amy demands $10 for, justice for Nurse Amy.
Yeah, seriously. Your queen and mine.
Yeah. On his way out to the butt boil, Michael runs into Jane, who has a bag of Thai food with no deeper meaning on its package design, unlike in years past, RIP the Gala Committee. The next day, Michael flirts with a couple of blonde motorists as he drives his Ferrari to Perry's house, definitely the one in his fantasy. Perry comes out on his cellular phone, talking up this sure thing stock deal and saying he's putting in $200,000 of his own, and then gets rid of his collar, saying Michael is the guy he owes his life to, and the two talk about the car for a while. Perry makes him come inside before they talk business, and Michael looks around hungrily at all the luxury before saying he couldn't come up with the cash. When Perry says he really wanted Michael along for the ride, Michael suggests that Perry just lend him the money, which Michael would then pay back with interest when the deal pays off. But Perry never lends money to friends. Wow, that's convenient.
Yeah.
Michael's leaving when Perry tells him, there's another deal coming up in a couple of days. The buy-in on this one is $150,000, and if Michael can come up with $100,000, Perry will make up the difference. And Michael is extremely excited until Perry keeps talking. Michael must know lots of rich people, so he should just call them and tell them he's raising money for charity. But not even Michael will go that far, so Perry quickly says, he's just kidding. Michael just needs to do whatever he can. And when we see Michael next, he's at the hospital. Peter's eavesdropping as Michael tries to get $100,000 from Jane's dad, who hangs up on him. Peter is disgusted. Clip 4.
Don't you know the rules? You don't call your father-in-law to try to borrow money because he calls your wife and tells her to come home to daddy.
She might have to. You see, Jane and I might be homeless soon.
Oh, please. There's nothing worse than a Beverly Hills doctor bitching about money.
Hey, you haven't seen my bank accounts lately.
You should be thankful for what you have. Just think of all those children that Dr. Burns is trying to help with his children's foundation.
Oh, sure, I'll help them, strangers, but it comes to giving his best buddy a loan and it's the big blow-off.
Listen, Michael, charity begins at home. Do you know the staff here has raised over $1 million for those kids?
Whoop-dee-doo.
Michael, sell the Ferrari, use that cash to pay off your legal bills, and stop with these get-rich-quick schemes.
In other words, stop living above your means.
I happen to like my means, people.
Well, then rob a bank, shoplift, steal the money. I don't care. Just quit complaining. I'm starving, Amy. I'll take you to dinner. Come on.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. I think I've finally seen the light.
But he has not seen the light about living within his means. He sneaks into Peter's office, gets on the computer, which is now not an iMac. It's just a laptop. And borrows $100,000 from the charity account. And you can see the pictures of this interface and the visual aids because it makes no sense.
None of this makes any sense. Like, part of me feels like if this is how Peter is going to be treating foundation money, then Michael sort of is right to just take it. Like, lock your office, close your laptop,
yeah.
Get a password. I mean, is your password Chris at halfway.22? I mean, what is your, why are you like this show? Like, I get why, but even for like a television program, the expediency with which shit could just be embezzled is ridic.
Yeah.
Do not like it.
Well, there's about to be an easier fix to this too, which is like, just anyway, this kind of comes down to like, it's 1999. Don't bank online. Like, I was not banking online at this time. I certainly didn't trust it. I'm sure people did. We all know about Billy's client, CompuBank, but I still doubt that this is the best way to do it, especially since we see like X transferred to Michael Mancini. Like, if anyone goes to look at the balance, yes, and is like, hey, where'd that money go? It fucking says like,
yeah, it even has this middle initial and it's like in all caps. Like, don't you look at that and you're like, oh,
whoops.
Waps. Like, is that the like fraud prevention measure? Is that it just like paints a scarlet E for embezzlement on you digitally?
Yeah.
And here's the crazy thing. And like, we'll get to this, I assume. But the actual con, spoiler, I guess, it's actually pretty well constructed, and the actor they have playing the cop who explains it is like pretty good at giving the setup. Mm-hmm. Not that we haven't seen it coming for 4 weeks, but
oh, yeah. Yes.
It's like, why couldn't you just keep going being clever? No, they ran out of clever for this episode.
Yep. So Perry finds Michael at the hospital the next day to get his check. Michael doesn't know how to thank Perry, who says he can't put a price on Michael's having saved his life, and they'll talk soon, or they'll talk never, because, spoiler, we never saw him again until he was in a mug book. And that night, Michael bitches to Jane about how much he hates doing laundry, but tomorrow they can hire someone else to do it, which, like, it's fluff and fold. It's like a dollar a pound. It's not that much, truly. Jane says her dad told her he had turned Michael down for the big loan, and Michael airily says he put together some money on his own and invested in a sure thing, and Jane is correctly concerned, dubious when Michael claims their money problems will be behind them soon. And the next day, Michael pulls the Ferrari in at Perry's place to see movers putting furniture in a truck. When Michael walks in yelling Perry's name, he gets no answer, and a mover says he doesn't know a Mr. Hutchins, a movie shot there a couple of weeks ago, but now they're gone, and the movers are breaking down the set. And Michael's even more astonished when he calls Perry's cell number and hears it's no longer in service, but he shouldn't be, because the Spanish prisoner at this point in time has been out for like a year.
Was just going to say, shopping at the big store, Melrose? Oh, great.
And again, I mean, I know I said this before, but like, pull the shit with any other character. Like, Michael should see through this. Michael should be the one telling someone else it's a scam.
Michael should be running it.
Yes.
Like, after all the, this is not the first time that one of us, usually you, has pointed out, like, when Jennifer, remember her, was still on the show, they said, which was technically this season, I believe. Yeah. No? Oh, let it end. That they implied that there were some connections to waste management. So, like, he would know. He would smell this. This is very dumb.
It is. When we see Michael next, he's at the cop shop finding Perry in a mug book, like I said. But his name isn't Perry Hutchins. It's Roy Burrows or Steve Hill or blah, blah, blah. Because he moves from state to state, tricking rich doctors into investment scams. But Michael says, no, he was a patient with a serious heart condition. Detective's like, oh, you sweet thing. No, no.
I know. You sweet summer child who never heard of meth, even though you work in the emergency room.
Yep, because what Perry does, or whatever his real name is he takes a bunch of decongestants to jack up his heart rate and mimic a heart attack. And then Michael feels even dumber when he goes outside and sees the repo man taking his Ferrari. Womp womp. Really should have sold it when he had the chance. Guess he never had a pink slip. Maybe that was the reason.
Yep.
So Michael gets home, actually seeming like he's about to tell Jane everything. But first she makes him sit down because she has a gift for him to show she's glad that he kept the car and invested in Perry's deal. She bought them the Rolexes they wanted back when he was in med school. Michael sadly tells her she has to take them back, but she can't because she got them engraved. Michael looks sick, but says, no, no, he's just overcome with emotion. Jane puts his watch on him, saying this is just the beginning of their lives with luxury, and she's never been happier, and he is in misery. And the next day, Michael leaves a meeting of Peter's children's charity, because what do you know, he has volunteered to be its treasurer. There are just so many holidays for them to make merry for the kids. Michael offers to come to Peter's office and download the accounting files, but the auditor is coming for the quarterly closing, and Michael declares he will handle it, and Peter is impressed. Michael's being so hands-on, and that's where we leave this for now. It seems like it would have made more sense from a story perspective for Michael to have gotten this job before. Like, then he could have just written a bad check and hid it from as in his capacity as the treasurer, but, you know, no one asked us.
Part of this plot line they did really well, and then the rest of it makes absolutely no sense.
Yes.
Like, first of all, the roadless C's
yeah.
are just like slung in some random mall box. Like, that's not how that works. I understand that you didn't get real roadless C's, nor did you need to, but
right.
I mean, come on, a little effort, like separate boxes for each one.
Mm-hmm.
Is one thing. And then the other thing is, could you maybe not have the character who, over the arc of both of their times on the show, has been absolutely the most skeptical of Michael and his motivations and ideas ever, mm-hmm. to be like, wow, it's great that you want to help. Like, did you get hit on the head with a C-do? Like,
yeah.
Why are you Jenny Garthing this plotline? It makes no sense.
Yes. Especially after you just heard him on the phone trying to mooch money from his father-in-law. Like,
yes!
Come on! That was this hour of
my
TV.
God, sprinkle a circle of borax around your laptop and make sure that ant does not get in there. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Rebate in form of Visa gift card equal to 100% off the second eligible item purchased before or after applicable discounts, if any. See details. Offer ends 7/9.
Finally, we have our A-plot. Eve tries to fix Kyle and Amanda's marriage. We open on Kyle toting his duffel bag through. Kyle's looking like shit before stopping at the bar and taking a bottle of scotch upstairs to where there is another bar, and he presumably could get scotch from there already. I also assume his office is full of it, but whatever.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
How come Estes has that leather jacket on all the time?
Oh, that's his drug jacket. That's why.
His what?
It's his drug jacket. That's how you can tell.
Okay.
He's on a downward curlicue.
Curlicue. Mm-hmm. I mean, sure. And like, sometimes he's sleeping under it, but like, it's like, don't you have heat?
Yeah.
That comes on at times.
I've got notes about the coat use. Don't worry. The sleeping in it is infuriating to me. Starting with when we saw him face down on his bed after he had just beat the shit out of Travis the tree guy and presumably had blood all on it that wouldn't have necessarily dried before he went and laid on the bedding. Upstairs, Peter is watching Eve on stage when Kyle walks between them, and the newlyweds share a charged look before Peter follows Kyle, busting into the office just as Kyle is about to fish a pill out of his baggie of whatevers. And Kyle recaps what Amanda and Ryan walked in on in New York, which we already know about. And when Peter grabs the mystery pills and yells at him, Kyle yells back that he had to fend for himself when Peter wouldn't refill his prescription. And whatever these are, they make him feel better. This is the point where Peter would go, well, they're whatever they are, but he doesn't. And so he tries to wash one down with scotch, and Peter yells at him again about mixing booze and pills. because Kyle has a problem and he has to talk to Amanda. Clip 5.
No, you know what? I'm so sick of people saying, I'm not going to talk to her. I'm not going to say anything. I am going to protect Amanda.
Protect? What does that mean, protect her?
It means I'm not going to destroy her dreams.
If you're not going to tell her, I will.
No, like hell you are. Get out of my office, man.
Push me out like this, Kyle. Listen to me.
Hey, what's going on? I can hear you guys all the way out in the club. Kyle!
Kyle, kiss
me. Madam, thinks I'm cheating, I might as well prove her right.
Come on, you guys, stop it,
you
Peter!
You got a lot of nerve, McBride.
At least I got something left.
I mean...
Oh, I thought there was more.
I mean... I'm sure I've made this reference before, but there were a couple of Criminal Intent episodes, but definitely SVU episodes where, like, kids would go to their parents' houses and just, like, put all the pills in the middle.
Yeah.
In a big bowl, and people would just, like, randomly take crap, and they didn't know what it is. That's not how you purchase drugs from a dealer. And yet, his baggie, like, and it also all looks like old school Dexatrim, which is neither here nor probably there. But their whole attitude towards how illegal drugs are in the Starverse is very funny to me.
Yeah. It's also like a court bag. Like, it's like he went trick-or-treating to everyone he knows, just with, like, emptied out. He ate his sandwich and then was like, what do you got? Put it in here.
Yeah. I think there are visible crumbs. It looks all, like, scuffed and stuff. Yeah. Whatever.
Look, I'm glad Rob Estes is having fun with this, because he's doing all the acting.
He really is.
Making sure you can see it from space. In the courtyard the next day, Eve stops Amanda to see if she is okay, given what she has heard about Amanda's marriage. Amanda doesn't want to talk about it, but Eve intensely says Amanda can't pretend with her. Well, Amanda married the greatest guy in the world twice, although she doesn't say that part, and he cheated on her. End of story, end of marriage, and she's not going to lose sleep about it. And they go on, clip 6.
Kyle usually passes out around 10, give or take an hour, depending how much he's had to drink.
Come on, Amanda. You know if people abuse alcohol, it's usually for a reason.
A reason unknown to me. And if you can't talk about it, we don't have a relationship worth saving. Have a good day.
You know as well as I do, Davey, that when people abuse alcohol... What the fuck kind of line was that? Not that it was getting any help from the actor, but Jesus. Like, that was just very stilted and, like, 1991, 90210.
Yes.
That's why I asked for the clip. That it was like, lights, please. I've prepared a PowerPoint. Thanks, Rena Sofer.
What? Well, there's that. And then there's also, like, in the early days of when Eve was on the show, she was sort of acting like she was in her arrested development of... still acting like a 16-year-old, because that's how old she was when she was incarcerated. And now it's like she's so wise about substance use. Like, okay, Dr. Drew, I mean, bad example, because he doesn't know his ass from his elbow when it comes to this either, we now know.
True.
But.
It is true.
It's weird that, like, suddenly she's supposed to be the person that has all this life experience when it's like, she was established as being the exact opposite of that.
Yeah, exactly. Like a couple of swigs of Pruno before you got paroled does not mean that you know shit about shit. But here we all are in the curly queue.
We sure are. So Eve then goes to the rock and roll club to bring coffee to Kyle, asleep on the couch next to an empty bottle under his leather jacket, even though there is a throw visible on the back of the couch right next to him. That's what it's for. Cover yourself up like a normal person.
Mm-hmm. Also, hey, wardrobe, he's the one who slept in the club, not Eve. Put a different pair of pants on her. I definitely remembered the belt and gigged it. So, hey, two-a-days, not great.
No. Kyle says he was out of line last night when he, you know, forcibly tried to kiss her, his friend and employee. He doesn't say that part, but she is, and Eve agrees. He doesn't want her getting in the middle of his business with Amanda, but she owes him her happiness, she says. Kyle intensely says he did not cheat on Amanda in New York. Eve knows and thinks that Amanda does too, deep down, and she has a plan. If Kyle showers and sobers up, those are two big ifs, but go on, Eve will bring Amanda to the club tomorrow. What happens after that is up to him, which is like, that's it? That's not a plan.
No.
Anyway, still, the next day, Eve comes to the agency to see Amanda, who is not here for it. Clip 7.
Before you say anything, I don't need any advice from a woman who's only had two relationships in her life and still thinks she's on her honeymoon.
Oh, okay. Insult me all you want, but it's not going to push me away and it's not going to get me to stop caring.
Then care in somebody else's office. I have a lot of work to do.
That's our girl.
I love her so much.
Yeah. If only we could say that to Eve and hope it would work.
Oh, God. Sigh. Yeah. Eve presses on with her plan. Clip 8.
You love Kyle. Kyle loves you. So why don't you meet him halfway?
No.
Yeah. Asked and answered, but there you go.
No. A complete sentence, especially when it's coming out of Amanda Woodward.
Mm-hmm.
Eve keeps trying and Amanda keeps refusing until Ryan walks in to take Eve's side. Amanda will not be bullied. There are plenty of things Kyle could have done to try to win her back over, but he didn't, so he can go fuck himself and so can they. I'm paraphrasing. Amanda comes home after work to a message on her answering machine from Kyle. Eve said she might come by the rock and roll club that night, and he hopes she does, and his hopes are fulfilled. As she enters the closed rock and roll club while he's at the piano, a bottle close at hand. Amanda says she got his message and warmly adds that she didn't know he played, but apparently he's already drunk enough to be mean. Clip 9.
Surprise, surprise. What message is it that you're referring to?
The message you left on our machine.
Oh, right. Right. I almost forgot because it was like 12 hours ago. I've had to work late, work before anything, right?
You're drunk.
And you are right, as always. I actually play much better drunk.
Fine. Yeah, you wanted to talk? Why don't you tell me why you're drinking so much?
Where should I start? Yeah, I like to drink. Mm-hmm. Gives me something to do. Dulls the pain.
What pain?
The pain that I feel when I look at you.
Come out with it.
Tried drinking to dull the pain that I feel when I have to watch this show. And it doesn't work. Also, as a retired pianist, take your fucking coat off. Oh, my God. It's, like, impossible to get any arm movement. Ugh. Why do I bother? Who cares?
Well, things devolve from there. He blames Amanda for turning up the pressure cooker with all her baby talk and for generally being a ball breaker, leading him around on a chain or something. And when she counters that he should have said something before they bought the lot and hired an architect, he pouts that it wouldn't have made a difference. And she wants him out of the apartment and out of her life. And when she's already gone, he says that's good and plays a few discordant notes for her to hear on the way down the stairs like a real fucking baby. The next day, Amanda's moving all his shit into the living room when Ryan shows up and she asks him to remove it to the club or the trash. She doesn't care. Ryan accuses her of having made up her mind that the marriage is over, but she says Kyle did that, actually, and tells him what happened the night before. If she is Kyle's problem, she won't be much longer, and then slams the door, as we heard up top. Ryan does a hilarious jump at the sound of the slam, like, you didn't think that was coming. It was pretty well telegraphed.
Yeah.
Over to the rock and roll club, where Ricky G and Sharp Objects walk in on Eve rehearsing with the house band, and they like what they hear, and presumably what they see even more. And before long, Eve gets uncomfortable about the way they're watching her and cuts the song. Kyle comes out hungover, of course, and excited to see Sharp Objects has decided to run out on their landlord dispute by coming to L.A. Ricky? Clip 10.
Man, this place rocks.
No, it doesn't. That's incorrect. Shut up, Ricky.
Also, it's closed. Like, there's nothing to see. All it is a space with a band in it. Like, no, it doesn't rock. It's maybe going to rock in 7 hours, but anyway, Kyle is ready to put the band on tonight, but they still don't have a new lead singer. And Ricky asks, what about the babe? And Kyle's about it and basically orders Eve to play with sharp objects against her will.
Yeah. Not how bands work.
No.
Also, that's going to be a fucking terrible show that I hope you're not charging for, dickhead.
Mm-hmm. And when we see all these people next, Eve is on stage looking furious as the band's guitarists crowd her and Kyle gets wasted next to Ricky. When Eve hauls ass off stage as soon as the song ends, Ricky also tries to feel her up and Eve snaps at Kyle that she's never singing with them again. She storms through the rock and roll club and Kyle follows. Clip 11.
What's wrong with you?
They're vile, okay? They reek of booze, they reek of dope, and they act like animals.
Hey, who the hell? Okay, you know what? You can start an empire with these guys.
Oh, please. Like, that's what I really want. Come on, think about it. I'm an ex-con whose husband doesn't know about my past. Is that registering anywhere in that booze-soaked brain of yours?
You register this. I strongly suggest that you continue to sit in with these guys.
Is that a threat?
You want a job?
You are a mean drunk. Go to hell, Kyle.
What'd you say to her? Women, you keep their secrets for them and so they got no damn loyalty. Been trying to get a hold of you all day, Kyle. Don't you check your messages? Got your stuff at my place. Amanda, she wastes no time.
This is actually like 6 months overdue, but okay, drunky.
Good for Eve, though. I mean, I guess it helps to be married to a chief of staff and be able to just make decisions like this, but she's right. She's about to be wrong in the next episode, but we'll get there. And so Ryan follows a still raging Kyle into the office, but Kyle is so drunk that when he takes a swing at Ryan, Ryan easily evades him and then gives Kyle the keys to his apartment to do whatever he wants with. Ryan is sick of being his nursemaid. Well, it turns out what Kyle wants to do is throw them at the wall after Ryan is already gone. Like,
literally, my notes. Ew.
And, you know, it's even more undercut when we find out Kyle apparently, like, then just went and sheepishly picked them up. Because the next day when Amanda comes to Ryan's place, she finds Kyle instead and gives him a piece of paper to pass on to Ryan. Before she can get too far away, clip 12.
Amanda, I'm going through something.
Damn right you are. I don't know you anymore. I'm not sure I want to.
Perfect little Amanda. You know something? I'm glad you didn't get pregnant. Because no kid could ever live up to your expectations. God knows I can't.
Finally, we agree on something.
That's cold, but he does deserve it.
Yeah, he absolutely does. I will also say, even though this plot line is dragging and is out of character for her, she is doing her best to act the shit out of it. The show at this point did not deserve her.
Definitely not. There's a version of this scene where he says that about he's glad she never got pregnant, where she looks really stung or something, or like reacts like it hurts her. And she, like, this is the Amanda we know. She has already mentally moved on from this guy. Like, he is already in her rear view as far as she is concerned emotionally. Which is why she keeps telling Eve, like, stop trying to make me do this. It's over. Like, I can't wallow in it. There's no point.
But she also has something in her line delivery that's like, she knows that he's sort of right, but, or like correct at least, even though not righteous about being right. But there's also a part of her that's like, not, she's afraid that that's true and that she can't be more traditional and it's so much more than the role deserves. So
yeah,
Emily, at least she's like trying. She comes to work and dresses to play and leaves it all in the field, and we thank her for her service because this show is so bad right now.
Yeah, it is. I keep hearing like it, at some point once they knew it was ending, like it turns a corner, and I keep waiting for us to get
like,
there.
Where is it? I know we keep seeing that on the Discord that like listeners are like, don't worry, pretty soon XYZ is going to happen. And I'm like, when are we going to get there? Just can't with this shit anymore.
Because where we are, I mean, we've already said like we're as repetitive as they are, but it's like every beat is stretched out to like three times the length it needs to be. Like just fucking get on with it. Anyway, I'm going to take my own advice. That night, Eve goes to the agency where Amanda's gazing out the window in the dark. Eve invites her for dinner, promising she won't mention Kyle, but there's nothing to mention. The marriage is over. And considering what a cock Kyle just was to Eve, it's kind of a shock to hear her say how sure she is that he and Amanda will work things out. Amanda doesn't think so, because it hurt to hear some of the things he said, but he was right. She destroys the man, then the marriage. And it's also what she did to Peter. She believes Eve should ask him about it sometime, which, like, lady, were you not listening the 23 times he has begged you to take him back? That's not what he's going to say about why your marriage ended. But anyway, Amanda doesn't know what she'll do without Kyle. She'll inhale less booze breath for starters, but no one says that. Mm-hmm. Over to Kyle's, where Peter's leaving with his takeout. Apparently totally fine giving business to the guy who just forced Peter's wife to quit the previous night, but he has to be on the premises so that this can happen. Clip 13.
Where the hell is Eve? She called in sick, but we both know that's bull, right?
If she said she's sick, she's sick.
You know, man, I don't get it. I am offering her the opportunity of a lifetime to play with my band. She blows me off.
Maybe she doesn't want to be around you.
Is this some kind of date?
Take it as a warning. Flush the pills down the toilet and knock off the booze.
Yeah, well, I got one for you, too. A warning. Don't believe everything the songbird tells you, or shall I say jailbird.
Ooh.
What's that supposed to mean?
Nothing. You get it.
They ask you a question, I want an answer. I go to Amanda with your dirty laundry.
Your wife spent the last 15 years in prison.
What?
Hey, hey, what are you saying? What are you talking about? She killed a guy back in high school, back in Oakhurst, the place where the two of you got hitched. Now she's out on parole and living with her best friend. Guess who? Amanda. Who would have been her cellmate, but you know Amanda, she bought her way out of it.
Who told you all this?
Eve and Amanda, day of your wedding. Partners in crime begged me not to tell you. They begged me, but you know, promises are made to be broken. Just like marriages. Right, Pete?
Well, finally, one secret is out. Good God.
Oh, but not before we had to slosh around in a, you know, lukewarm, nip-high pool of cliches that don't even make any sense. Like, promises are made to be broken, just like marriages. Like, good one? Confucius say, shut the fuck up.
The so line tired. Delivery on... Ask Songbird, should say Jailbird. Like, okay, you're drunk. We fucking get it.
Like, I know.
Give the man another take. Anyway, that's it. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. Amanda giving this man more chances than he deserves and finally deciding to stop. I mean, not forever, but at least for now.
Perry, and it's not close. He's got a system. He worked his program. He got 100 grand and he peaced out of this boring fucking show. Perry is my president.
Least valuable player. I mean, it's one thing for Michael to fall for this. It's another for Jane to fall for Michael's bullshit. Like, I'm going to say Jane because she should know better.
By that same token, so should Peter, but I'm still going to say Kyle. Please take that jacket to a dumpster and put it inside. Thank you. Next time on Again With This, the one time Michael didn't sexually harass someone, he gets busted for it. Plus, Peter researches a future true crime podcast, and the verb to hook is used incorrectly and many, many times. Speaking of incorrect and many, many times, the late 90s fashions in our visual aids. We do those for every single episode of Again With This. Quote, enjoy! That's it, againwiththispodcast.com. You can also find out more about our Patreon at againwiththispodcast.com/club if you haven't already, and we've got a call-in show coming up. We would love to hear from you, club member or not. That number is 210-920-4699. You can leave a voicemail or text us, and you can also send an audio file to hello@againwiththispodcast.com. In my notes, this was typed hell@againwiththispodcast.com. Stet. Anyway, I'm usually passed out Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is easily impressed New York band manager Tari Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tari Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, has finally seen the light. Talk to you next time.
End of the line, psychos.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.